We are finishing our series on culture, and we've been looking at the culture. It's important not just to know what you're going to do, but who you're going to be. And so this whole thing of culture, which you've got some notes on, is what we're doing. The five things that we call our culture are honor, generosity, acceptance, authenticity, and courage. And so this is who we are as a community, or at least this is who we want to be. And I wanted to start this morning, just as we look at culture and the family, with a story. And I need two volunteers. I need, you know, some frustrated drama students. I need those who just like to. I need a father and a son. So that's what I'm looking for. So if there's someone, one of the teenagers wants to be a son, you know, you'd come on. You're just desperate to looking for a son. And I'm looking for a father, someone who could play a father. I'm really, really struggling here. Help me here. I'm dying up here. Here we go, Darren. Okay, I need a son. I need a son. Anyone? Come on. Okay. You guys are up here. This is a stage moment. So very familiar story, and I want you guys to bring it to life. You're not related anyway, even distantly. No? Okay. That's good. I want you guys to bring it to life, and I'll give the dialogue, but you've got to just make this story come to life, alive to us. Okay, so Luke 15, there was a man, he had two sons, we're just dealing with one of them, and the younger one said to his father, "Father, give me the property that's coming to me." And so the father divided the property between them. And he gave that property to his son. And so a few days later, the son gathered everything that he had, gathered it together, and he went off to a far country. And he went off to a far country, and he squandered the whole lot on reckless living. It's not very reckless. I think we need a bit more recklessness. A little bit more recklessness. We need a little, you know, a little bit of... It was too reckless, was it? Oh, sorry, I missed that. Okay, it was too reckless. Okay. Okay, apparently that was reckless enough. Okay. No more recklessness needed. Stop being so reckless. Okay, so when he spent everything, there was a severe famine in the country and he was in need. He was starving, and so he went and hired himself out. I think you have to get on the stage because no one can see you at the back, so come up back up here. Come back to the closer country. And he was starving, he couldn't do anything, and so he gave himself to one of the citizens who set him to feed the pigs in the field. We don't have any pigs, so you guys can oink for a little bit. Thank you. So he fed the pigs in the field, which was really humiliating. He was longing to be fed with the pig food himself, but no one gave him anything. He was tempted, but he didn't eat it. So when he came to himself, he said, "How many of my father's hired servants have got more than enough to eat? And I'm starving here with hunger. I'm going to go to my father. I'm going to say, 'Father, I have sinned against heaven and against you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Treat me like a servant.' So he arose and he came to his father." Now, a long way away, you're going to have to come over here. A long way away, his father saw him and he had compassion on him. You ought to have been shot. He had compassion on him and he ran. He embraced him. And he kissed him. And he said, "Father, I have sinned against heaven and against you." You might want to get on your knees or something at this point. "I am no longer worthy to be called your son." But the father said to his servants, "Bring the best robe, put it on him. Put a ring on his hand, put shoes on his feet, bring a fattened calf and kill it. And let's eat." We don't need a fattened calf, I don't think. "Let's eat and celebrate. For this son of mine was dead, is alive again. He was lost, and now he's found." And they began to celebrate together. Well done, guys. Very good. So that story is just a fantastic illustration of culture. There's amazing things that we can learn about culture in family. One of my favorite stories in the Bible, one of the most powerful stories actually in the Bible about God and us and the father and children, but also we can learn stuff about natural families. And of course, what we're looking at here, the principles apply much wider than natural families. They apply if you're a parent here of physical children, but also if you're a parent of spiritual children, you're a leader of people. They apply if you're a child, if we're all hopefully children, and if you're not, let me know. And they apply if you're a child, if you're an adult child, if you're a young child. I've particularly looked at this in the light of being a teenager. What does it look like for you guys? So there should hopefully be some stuff in there for all of us. So how do we apply these cultures? So firstly, the whole area of honor and acceptance. How do we apply this stuff, and what can we learn from this story? Well, you see from that story, the way the father treats the son right the way through is so powerful, isn't it? The way that he treats him with such honor, such value, such respect for who he is and his choices. You know, you see that decision right at the early stage where the son is going to make this. And what he was saying to the father is, I wish you were dead. Basically, that's very well known. That's what he's saying. I wish you were dead when he says, give me the inheritance. And yet the father, we can imagine him wrestling with this decision. Do I give it to him? Do I not give it to him? Do I hold it back? What do I do? What do I do in this situation? And yet he decides to give the son. I guess he decided this is going to work its way out one way or another. If I don't give it to him and keep him here, it's just going to go internal. I've just got to let him go with it. We don't know why he made that decision. We don't get that. But we must understand, if you're a parent, you'll understand the wrestling that he went through to make that decision. And yet he gives it to him. And yet he watches for his son. Even though he knows that his son has made a bad decision, I guess he was trusting that he wouldn't, but I suspect he thought that he probably would. He watches for that son. It's just a powerful picture of God with us, isn't it? As we go into rebellion, as we waste the things that God has given us, squander them so often, as we run away. If you're not a believer here this morning, you need to know that even in your worst moment, God was watching. He was watching for you, longing for you to come home, longing for you to come back for him. Even at that point where you're at your lowest, at your most rebellious, he was looking for you. That's what this story tells us about our father. And when he comes back, he doesn't lecture him. He doesn't say, I told you so. He just brings him straight back. He doesn't almost even give him a chance to apologize. He just draws him home. It's just amazing, isn't it? The honor, the acceptance that he shows to the son. The son, of course, doesn't honor the father at all, at least initially. His request is, I wish you were dead. He squanders his father's hard-earned wealth that perhaps had been in the family for generations, a shameful thing. He gets a shameful job that would have brought disgrace on the family. In that culture, feeding the pigs was something that was left to non-Jews, and yet he kind of gets this job because he refuses at that point to go home. He just has to get to the bottom of the bottom before he gets there. But eventually he does honor his father. He does come round. He does begin to seek, oh gosh, my father's house is so much better than this place. And so there's so many principles we can learn. How can, as parents, can we honor our children? Well, just a few things, and there's hundreds of things you could say, but just a few things. Firstly, I would say, let encouragement be the foundation of your parenting. Let encouragement, rather than critique and challenge, be the foundation of everything you do as a parent or a leader. I see it like this. It's like a pair of scales. It's like a pair of scales. How are your scales doing? Are your scales like this or like this? I would say, let your scales, if this is encouragement and this is critique and challenge, make sure your scales are way over here. That for every critique and challenge, you are lavishing them with encouragement. Is it? No, this was, which one did I say this was? No, I've got it right. Oh, anyway, whatever. I think you get the point. Everyone's confused. What should I be doing? Critiquing? No. The point is this. You should be encouraging, okay? Let the weight of your encouragement overwhelm. I'm confused now. I don't even know what I'm saying. Let the weight. Do you know, one of my teachers at school, the class's attention was this. He would drag his fingernails down the blackboard. Oh, my God. I don't know what they do now. What do teachers do with the screen thing? It just doesn't work, does it? It makes no noise. But he used to drag his fingers down the blackboard to get the class attention. And man alive, we just all woke up at that point. Oh, just so grating. And yet, do you know what? That's what it feels like so often to me when I hear parents criticize their children in public, in front of other people. And I see it, I see it again and again and again. And I would urge you as parents, do not do it. It is so, so damaging, particularly to your teenagers, but to children of any age. Don't criticize them. In fact, I've even been in situations where I've been encouraging a parent about their child, saying, your son is so good at this. And the parent immediately switches into, yeah, but he's not brilliant at home. He's not great at this, that, and the other. And they switch into critique. I'm like, hang on a minute. This is a moment where I'm trying to create an atmosphere where we're valuing this person. But sometimes in our psyche, we feel like, no, if I let them be encouraged, they'll somehow end up proud. Well, if you don't let them be encouraged, they'll end up broken. So I'll really encourage you that to listen, to be reasonable, to give as much freedom and choice as you can, to help your kids choose wisely. If you're a parent, I encourage you. Caroline and I, the most profound book we've ever read on parenting, we've read a few, but this one changed our lives, called Love and Logic, which you can get, I think it might be on the bookshop. If not, they can order it, or you can get it on Amazon. Love and Logic. And it's the most profound book in terms of our internal change. And one of the chapters that changed me the most was a chapter that's called Let Your Yes Be Yes and Your No Be Yes As Well. Let your yes be yes and let your no be yes as well. And it really changed my thinking, because the point of the chapter is, as parents, we spend so long saying no. As leaders, so often we want to say no. As parents, we want to say no, 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 no. And the point of the book is, think about how you can change your no's into yeses. And as you do, there is a time to say no. But what you'll find is, as you turn those no's into choices, suddenly you say no a far lot less than you ever did before. You just stop saying no. You just don't hardly ever say no. It's always a choice. And so our parenting, our way we relate to adults changed as a basis of this chapter in the book. It was such a profound change. And let me give you an illustration. Early morning, going to school used to be a nightmare. It used to be a war zone for us. Can I play on the Wii? Can I do that? No, 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 no. Get your stuff ready. Get dressed. Get your breakfast. No, no, no. It was like a continual list of no's to get the kids out of the door. We read this chapter and things started to change. And we were like, okay, guys, there's a choice. Mum's car is leaving this house at 8:25. If you're in it, wonderful. You get to go to school. If you're not in it, then Dad will take time off work and stay at home. Mum will take those who are ready to school, and then she'll come back, and she will take you to school, and you'll have to go straight to the headmistress's office or the headmaster's office and explain why you were late. We won't give you a note or anything. You'll have to explain to your relevant teacher why you're late. Our kids were like, you wouldn't do that. It's your choice. So the next day, I won't say which of our children. Two of our children were ready, one was not. And so we were like, okay. So no hints, no warnings, nothing. I just reminded them about 10 minutes ago, okay, Mum's car's leaving in 10 minutes' time. You've got a choice. You can either be in it or not. It's your choice. You wouldn't do that. 10 minutes later, Caroline's in the car. The others are all in the car. Car starts pulling out of the parking space. This child is running out with no shoes, no socks, bags under their arms, running to the car. Gets in the car, atmosphere like cloud in the car. It's hardly ever been a problem since. We have never had to do that to keep one home. Mornings for us are now peaceful, it's relaxed. I get time to read the paper. You know, it's just like, it's totally changed the cycle, because let your yes be yes and let your no be yes as well. There's something about recognizing that as parents, as leaders, our job is to help people see they have choices, help children see they have choices. And we all have choices, and our choices lead to good or bad for us and for those around us. Don't lecture. Use questions is a profound thing. When people make mistakes, when kids make mistakes, don't lecture. Use questions. And lots of other things there. How, as children, can you show honor to your parents? This applies as you're an adult child, as a teenager or a young child. I would say this. Accept that your parents are different from you and learn to love that. Your parents like boring music, they wear funny clothes, they think they're cool, they're not. We all know that. That's the reality. You've decided, perhaps already, I'm going to live my life differently to my parents. And do you know what? That is part of the teenage years. It's recognizing that you have a different identity to your parents. You are different to them, and that's okay. But what I would suggest to you is that in a culture of honour, you can still honour their differences. You can still recognise that their music may not be cool, but they still like it. That the way they've lived their life may not be the way that you want to live your life, but it's been okay for them. They've made their choices. And you don't have to destroy their choices to make your own choices. Does that make sense? As you would like them to honour your choices, your music, your clothes, then I would say the reverse applies, where you choose to honour their music, their clothes. And, of course, it's bigger than music and clothes, although for some of us it's not. It's all about music. But you get my point. There's an acceptance that we can live with of one another. And I would say the other thing is, if you're a teenager here, value your parents' opinion. If you're a child of any age, which we all are, value your parents' opinion even when you disagree with them, even when you think they're wrong. Learn to communicate in a way that says, I value your opinion, but I disagree with you on this one, rather than coming against them as one who would destroy their opinion and them in the process. You can value the two together. And this applies to both parents and kids, which is this: watch your words and your tone. You can communicate so much in tone, can't you? And yet so many mistakes that we make in relationships are not about the words that we say, but the tone in which we say them. For example, tidy your room. Tidy your room can be said, you tidy your room. Can be said, tidy your room. Oh, tidy your room. Tidy your room. You know, there's so many different ways I can, so many different things I can express through one expression, through tone. Well, it works that way for teenagers and kids and adults as well. Tone is so powerful. And what we have to do is to recognize that sometimes we don't know what tone we're using or how it's coming across. And so the way to do it is to ask, how is my tone? How is the things that I'm saying? How is it coming? Some of you are like shrinking at this point. No, ask one another in your families, how is my tone coming across? Because if you really want to communicate honor, the words that you use are important, but equally as important is the tone that you use with those words. How about authenticity? Notice in this story, the father models just an amazing authenticity in this run, which we saw demonstrated so wonderfully there by Darren. The run, I'm not sure the jump was authentic, but maybe, we don't know. But the run, when he sprints, because in that culture, older men never ever ran. It was a sign that it was a young man's game. Older men would never run. It was a sign of that you'd arrived, that you didn't have to run anymore. You went at your own pace. And yet this father runs. Why? Because he doesn't want his son to have to do the walk of shame into the village, covered and stinking. He doesn't want his son to have to walk past all the neighbors before he gets there and endorses him. And so he runs to him. He covers him with a cloak. It's such a powerful picture for us of our Heavenly Father. But also, the younger son, actually, this is one of his strong points, ultimately, is his authenticity. He finally fesses up. You know, there's many kids who go through a breakup like this who never ever come home again. They are too proud to admit they got it wrong, that dad was right, and so they never come home again. Well, this son made some mistakes, but one thing he did do right was his authenticity in coming home and saying, Dad, I made a mistake, I got it wrong. How can we be authentic in our families? I just want Caroline just to come and share a quick story of something that we were aware of.
Well, we had the privilege of being in the room for a, kind of a meeting, just like this father and son, when the son came home, and it was a few years ago, and what the background was that a child had done something horrendous and then lied about it for 4 years and said that they hadn't done it. And it was really, it was a really serious thing that they had done, and it affected someone else. And we happened to be in the room on the night when this child confessed that he had done it and that he had lied. And he was big, and he was over his dad's shoulder, and he was just weeping on his dad's shoulder. And in that moment, I was sitting there thinking, I am really interested to see how this dad's going to handle this, because this is a big deal, And that kid needs to know that he can never do anything like that again, and that he can never lie about that again. So I hope that dad comes down hard on him. And that really revealed my own brokenness. But instead, the dad, while he's holding this big child, and the child is weeping, the dad is weeping as well, and he keeps looking to Simon and me and saying, he's been carrying this for so long. He's been carrying this for so long, and he was just weeping because his poor boy had been carrying this shame and this lie for so long. And I was just in a moment thinking, oh, God, and God just said to me, I wanted you to see this because I wanted you to know that that's exactly how I feel when you come to me. I'm not angry. I'm not trying to make a point that you got it wrong and I was right. But I love you, and I feel gutted when you carry things for a long time. And it was really something.
Fantastic. Thanks, Carl. It's great. So just a couple of comments on creating this culture of authenticity in the home, and many of these apply both ways. We'll only just touch on them. But I would say one of the things is, as a parent, you set this culture, and so admitting when you've made a mistake is so, so powerful. I think I've gone to all of my children when they were very young. As soon as I had an opportunity, too, and said to them, you know, I remember with Caleb, my middle son, when he was about 3 or 4, went to him, and it was a fairly big deal. Obviously, I'd said sorry before this point, but it was a fairly big deal, something I'd made a big blunder on. And I got on my knees, and I said, son, I'm so sorry. I made a big mistake in this. Will you forgive me? And the look on his face, he was so chuffed. I mean, he was beaming ear to ear. Dad is saying sorry to me. He's on his knees begging my forgiveness. He didn't know what to do with himself. He was so, so pleased. But I knew at that moment it was sowing in a seed into his little life. That this is the culture that we want. That when we make mistakes, parents aren't perfect. When they make mistakes, they will say sorry. They will humble themselves. And they'll not just dish it out as a, I did this, but you did this. You know, that was, I was clear. There were some mistakes he had made, but I thought, no, I'm not even going to mention any of those. I want to go, an unadulterated apology. None of his issues, just my issues. And we can sort other stuff out later. So create that place. Let them see you act and speak with integrity. Share struggles, you know, in an age-appropriate way. We try and share struggles, financial struggles, other things with our kids in an appropriate way to live in that culture. Train them to tell the truth. That as parents, telling the truth is like a foundation block in our family. We say to kids that nothing is too great for us to know as long as it's based on the truth. The truth is the most important thing. We can get through anything together if we know the truth. Because we want to break shame and this isolation that comes. We want to create a foundation of the truth. And sometimes it goes too far. When, you know, our youngest gave Kyra, our oldest, a hug recently, and as he's hugging her, he's like, I don't like hugging her. No, okay, this is not the moment right now. It's not the moment right now to say this. It's a little too, it goes too far sometimes, but it's recognizing that foundation, learning when's appropriate to share the truth is critical. And kids, how can we be authentic with our parents? Well, I would say it's the same thing. It's telling the truth even when you know you're going to be disciplined. Because the loss of heart connection is just not worth it. The loss of connection that you will gain over years by not telling the truth just is not worth it. And my own story might help you guys. You know, when I was 6, I learned that the teacher didn't always keep an eye on the things on the desk. And so there was a few times where I stole things off the desk that belonged to other kids and never got caught and felt really pleased with myself. When I was 12, I noticed that my dad often left change in his pocket. And I realized that I could take a few pounds here and there and he would never notice because he had so much change. So I started to do this on a regular basis to top up my pocket money. When I was 18, I got involved with stealing stuff from a company and suddenly it became serious. Suddenly it became a big deal because another guy who was involved actually got a criminal record because of it. And I haven't got time to go into the whole story of how I eventually had to confess to that company. And for the first time, knew the grace of God, as the boss said, you can walk, you know, thank you for your courage in telling me this story. You can go out of here. I won't mention it again. It was a powerful moment. But my point in this telling this story is the seeds for that got sown years earlier when I was 6 years old and I got away with it. That's when the seeds got sown. of deceit and shame, and they carried right the way through my life till they came to fruition when I was 18. And there's something about that, guys, that you can learn at a young age to live with authenticity and get stuff out into the open. Don't let pride stop you from admitting when you've been wrong for so years. I think one of the things that I would regret as a child of my parents is that through the years that I was a child, very often my parents would do things, and my parents have got lots of strengths, but they would do things that would cause me to want to shut down. They would speak to me in a way that would want to make me want to shut down. Instead of talking to them about that, I just shut down. I just withdrew. I would encourage you guys, don't do that. That is a mistake that I bitterly regret. And I lost lots of years and lots of connection with my parents because I withdrew from them instead of saying, Mum, when you say this, this is how it makes me feel. Dad, when you do this, this is how it makes me feel. I would encourage you guys, teenagers, wherever you're sitting here, go to your parents. If they're doing stuff that make you want to withdraw, go to them and say, I want to create a home of authenticity. The way you're speaking or acting right now makes me want to withdraw. And I don't want to do that, so can we talk about it? It's powerful and it changes things when you do this stuff. And lastly, courage and generosity, very quickly. I mean, obviously the generosity of the father in this story is breathtaking, isn't it? I mean, it's just so powerful. His generosity, both on the leaving and on the coming back, just says so much. But also, the courage to let his son make a wrong choice is powerful. And the courage to cover his son's shame. Effectively, what he's saying is, I'm going to take the hit for this. I'm going to take the shame from my friends, from those in the village that I know. I'm going to take the shame for this because I'm covering him with my cloak. It's a powerful picture of what Christ has done for us. I am taking the shame for their junk by covering them with my blood. That's what it's painting to us. But it paints a powerful picture for the family. And the son obviously doesn't show masses of generosity apart from his party-going friends. But ultimately, he does show real courage to come back home. And how can we be courageous in our families as parents and as kids? Well, I would say this. The danger for us often is we can think, is it family or mission? You know, I don't want to sacrifice my family on the altar of mission. I had a good friend at university whose parents were missionaries. And she was just a mess. She, because of their neglect of her, she was just a mess. And when I started leading the church, one of the things that I said to God is, God, if I do this, I'm trusting you with my kids. I don't want to sacrifice my kids on the altar of church leadership. I don't want to burn myself out and my family out. I don't want to, you know, do all of this for the sake of a church and then my own kids walk away from God because of the way that I've lived my life. It was a really big deal for me, particularly in Caroline as well. I think I've realized over the years that it's not family or mission, it's family on mission. That we do this together. That this is what it's about. It's us as family doing it together. And so we've led them on mission or done the best that we can to lead them on mission together. But in lots of different ways. You know, I have the opportunity to travel. We took our family recently. They got to see what I do when I go to other churches. It was fantastic for them. We pray regularly for the persecuted church. We've had to dial it down a little bit because our youngest is only 4. I was going to Lowestoft recently and he said to me before I went, he said, Dad, are you going to die for Jesus in Lowestoft when you go? I was like, okay, maybe we've been praying for the persecuted church a little bit too much. I'm not going to die in Lowestoft, as far as I know. I might do, but it's unlikely. So we have had to dial it down a little bit. The older two can handle it and contextualize it, but he was struggling, obviously, which I hadn't realized. But it's so critical, we've seen, to help kids see that they're part of a bigger family, that actually there's more going on. We pray for Iran. You know, there's a pastor at the moment who's going to be executed, got 3 young kids. We're praying for him as a family and saying, God, you know, the Iranians again have said we're going to execute him. We're praying, God, no, don't let it happen in Iran. So I found it's just powerful for the kids to see what's going on in the church around the world, that they're on mission together. And to teach kids to value the poor, to value and to give to the poor. I loved it when our Quest group, and Kyle, our daughter, was part of that, gave to the homeless and sold their toys. It was just so powerful. It's only a small thing, but it was just such a powerful recognition of what God loves us to do. And how can we be generous with our parents as kids? Well, You know, I would say one thing, a few things, but one main thing is be more generous with your gratitude for what they've done than you are with your critique for what they have not done. Be more generous. This applies definitely to teenagers and adults. Be more generous with your gratitude for what your parents have done right or have done than you are with your critique of what they've not done. And I'm talking about in your heart. I'm talking about in your heart, not necessarily with your mouth. With your mouth as well, but sometimes we won't critique our parents openly, but it's on the inside. And I would challenge us all, let's live generously, recognizing that our parents made mistakes, but be so grateful for the things that they did right. They're so grateful for the things. You know, my parents have made many mistakes, but in their parenting, they've taught me to love Jesus. They were faithful in prayer for me, even in my years when I went away from God. They prayed. My mum even recently took a job to give money to Caroline and us so that we could have some extra things. She took a job to give us all the money from that job. You know, they've taught us phenomenal things in their generosity and the way that they've been so generous with all that they have in their lives to us. And so I have to focus on those things and not on the things that, they haven't got it right. And I have to remember that their upbringing, what they brought me up, is far greater and far better than anything they ever got given. It's so critical to live like that. And the other thing is this, what your parents don't need is your money. Mostly they don't need your money. Sometimes they do. What they really want is thoughtful gifts. Thoughtful gifts, and this applies at any age. Thoughtful gifts are far more powerful than any financial thing that you can give them. So recently, over the last few years, Caroline and I have given my parents a photo book, which takes me, time is one thing I am very short of. You know, it'd be easy for me to spend 20 quid, 25 quid. Spending 3 hours on a photo book, on, you know, putting it together is a cost. But I tell you what, when we go, it's the thing that comes out again and again. When we send them a new one, it's the thing that comes out again and again. And my mum told me this time, she said, when my friends come around, she said, they all want to look at our photo books because none of them have ever received one from their kids. And I thought, how sad. I wonder, it's not blowing one's own trumpet, but I thought it's so simple, it does cost time, but it's so easy to do these days. But it's a powerful recognition of how we can live generously with the things that our parents actually need, which is our affection and our time and our thoughtfulness. This is how we embed this culture into our homes. So I hope, what I would encourage you is, there was just some notes I put together. I would encourage you, if you can, look at them as a family together. And you might even disagree with me. Well, that's okay, as long as you come to agreement together. How can we embed this culture in our family? How can we really take it to a new level? Remember that prophetic word? This is the last in our series on culture. But God spoke to us, he said, it's like a baker kneading the dough. I'm going to be kneading this culture in. Well, I would encourage you, how can we take this to a new level in our families so we really are living it together? Some of you have got extended families who are not there. Be thinking, how can I apply this in that situation?